This is Keep On Cooking, a podcast for people who love cookbooks and want to know more about the authors. It's also a great place to get a weekly dose of culinary inspiration to keep things pumping in the kitchen. So grab a cookbook and keep on cooking. I'm Dustin Harder, and this is Keep On Cooking. Hello, and welcome to Keep On Cooking, the only podcast dedicated to plant-based cookbooks. I'm your host, Dustin Harder, and he is the Linda to my alphabet. It's the one of the actual sweetest men I've ever known, probably the most sweetest man I've ever known in my entire life. It's my husband, David Rossetti. How you doing?
Good. The ga is silent. What is that,
Linda?
It's not like you've got braces. How they do it?
I can't remember. We'd have to see the musical again. I have no problem with seeing Wicked for the 57,000th time.
That is a correct.
I love Wicked, and we didn't know each other when it came out, but this will not surprise you. True to Dustin fashion, it came out, it was very popular, and I was like, I want nothing to do with that. It's
Shocker.
Garbage. Mm-hmm. Only to, like, 2 years later be like, this musical is the best musical I've ever seen.
But the man who loves Phantom, who's the same thing.
How, like, dare you?
Wildly loved.
Listen, I don't love Phantom. Like, it's not standing in my love of musicals as, like, a top favorite musical. However, I appreciate it for the history that it holds in the musical theater landscape. And I think it's very strange that we are literally the exact same age. And it was nowhere in your, like, anywhere in your life in middle school or high school.
No.
Like, you didn't have to be in musical theater for Phantom of the Opera to be making an impact on you in the early 90s. Like, everyone was catching. Because the chandelier falls.
Did you
everyone
see it? It falls every night.
Every night, it falls very slowly.
Very slowly.
And doesn't really crash. It just kind of falls to
the stage. If anybody was just stumbling on this podcast, they'd be like, this is a musical theater podcast. Like, what's going on?
I know, because last episode, I couldn't help it. I'm tying in some of our, I'm giving our authentic self to
that's
the
us.
Listeners. That's what I'm doing.
That's us.
You see?
We should do a musical episode.
I mean, David and I always have ideas. Remember when we were first talking about video ideas? I'm talking way back in the day. Mm-hmm. It was like, I want to do a karaoke cooking show.
Karaoke kitchen.
And it would be like me putting the recipe I created to the tune of a song that's popular. And I was just like, the more we thought about it, I was like, that feels like a lot of work. Also,
it'd be fun for like one, maybe we'll do like one episode.
I mean, we can give it a try, but I'll be very honest in saying I'm not a lyricist, so making it work seems a little difficult.
We can make it work.
I mean, we can hire Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah,
he's not doing nothing.
Hey, Lin, anybody know Lin?
He's not doing nothing. Listen, everybody, we said it last week, we're saying it now, we're going on spring break. Can't tell you when we'll be back. David and I are taking a breather. We're getting ourselves over to Chicago, and then we're going to pop back up.
As in moving to Chicago.
Yeah, as in moving there. And then once we get all settled, we're going to start recording again. I already got a great list of guests. I got a stack of books, and I got to get my calendar all populated. Once I know when I can start recording again, we're going to get that calendar populated and get these awesome interviews underway for you. So we come back with a bang when we come back from spring break. Now, listen, a great gift
to
give
us.
Uh-huh. You know, we're celebrating being over 100 now. So, but if you like the podcast, yes.
Not us.
Though we look really good. Oh, wait. Together, we're still not over 100. I was going to say combined we are, but nope, not yet. If you like the podcast, we would be so delighted and so grateful if you would go rate, review, and subscribe. Review being the biggest word there. We haven't really been hitting this home that much, and we've got some great reviews on Apple Podcasts, but if you're feeling it,
yeah. And while we're having a little break, you know, go back and kind of dig in the vault. And, you know, this is episode 102.
102!
102. So you got plenty of things to dig into with amazing guests. And
it might be your first episode. Maybe our very fantastic guest is the reason you're listening today. In which case, if you like the episode, go back and listen to the other ones. We got a big one for you this week. She's very popular. And her new book, Plant You, Scrappy Cooking, 140 plus plant-based zero waste recipes that are good for you, your wallet, and the planet is available today. Everywhere books are sold. We have Carly Bodrug on the cat on the podcast. Of course, she is the CEO and founder of Plant You, a New York Times best-selling cookbook author and self-taught plant-based chef.
I love that. She's famous for her simple take on low waste and vegan recipes. Carly has been featured on Good Morning America, The Rachel Ray Show, Martha Stewart Magazine, and Eating Well.
Boasting over 7 million followers. Do you hear that, babies? 7 wow. million followers between her social channels. Carly has gripped social media with her simple and delicious low-waste recipes that make plants the star of the show.
And in Carly's new book, Scrappy Cooking, 140 plus plant-based zero waste recipes that are good for you, your wallet, and the planet. She is on a mission to help readers save money, reduce waste, food waste, and eat healthier than they ever have before with delicious recipes that are customizable to the fridge and pantry items that home cooks already have on hand.
Yeah, and she does it incredibly well. I've been watching her do this Scrappy Cooking series over at Plant You, and it's so fun to watch. I mean, little things like one of my favorite ones she showed on there, and the book is full of stuff like this, but she took like the peanut butter jar at the end of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she put just a little water in it, and then she shook the jar around, and then she put like stuff in it to season it for a pad thai and used it as a pad thai sauce. I was like, peanut this sauce.
Yep.
Woman is a genius. So I'm so excited about this interview and for you to go grab this book and her first one. Please welcome the fantastically talented and charismatic Carly Bodrug. With a dream that started as a humble little blog to help people integrate more plants into their diet, she's gone on to create a strong community of 4 million and growing, and even become a New York Times bestselling author with her debut cookbook. It's the founder of the very popular blog, Plant You. Please welcome to Keep On Cooking, Carly Bodrug. Thanks for being here.
I'm so jazzed to be here. I think this is going to be so much fun. Thank you, Dustin.
Absolutely. We're going to dive right into your icebreaker question, something non-food related. Well, I guess that depends on your answer, really. But just to get to know you a little beyond the food, describe one past action, big or small, you took to improve the quality of your life.
One past action. Okay, so this is a big one. And as somebody who's big on social media as well, you would resonate, but my addiction to my phone is next level. And probably something so simple that had a dramatic impact on my health and my life was starting to leave my phone out of the room when I went to bed so that I was not doom scrolling through the wee hours of the night. And you think it's one small action, but it really impacts your sleep in such a dramatic way. And then also when you wake up without your phone in the room, you're not starting by sitting in bed and watching TikToks for 2 hours. So one small action, big results.
Yeah, that's amazing. So how long ago did you do that?
That was probably around 8 months ago.
And have you held pretty true to it?
Most of the time.
Good for you.
Most of the time. And I notice when I like fall back into bringing my phone to bed, like I'm in the book launch right now. So I'm like, I gotta be emailing people, checking my stuff.
Yeah.
It's no good can come of it. Sure. No good can come of it. So if you do one habit switch, I do think it's impactful.
I love that one. I've made the attempt. And I will continue to do so because I hear you on the benefits of it. And I have felt really good when I do it because like I'll go to bed and like I'll read a book for a half hour and I'm like, oh yeah, that's what you used to sit in bed. You'd read a book or you'd just go right to bed. You know, you wouldn't get on your phone and just kind of be on it forever. So I love that one. Mine is food related. Funny I said that it's not food related, but mine ended up being food related. And you can probably resonate with this too. You're running around, you're doing all the recipe testing, you're cooking, you're eating bits of this, you're like going about your day, food, food, food. When my husband and I bought this condo a couple of years ago, we had a small dining table when we were in New York. and we ate at it occasionally, but we were always running around. We couldn't like make the time to sit. We bought a beautiful kitchen table, and I was like, I make food that's too good for us to be running around, eating it on the couch or running around doing this. I was like, we need to pause. So I'd say probably 4 out of the 7 nights of our week, we sit down and actually have a meal at the table. And it was just that we had to get the good table though. You know, it was like thing of getting the table, and it was like, oh yeah, no, we have this beautiful dinner table now, you know, and it's really been life-changing. Like we connect there. It's just like families in olden timey days, you sit at the table around your meal and you talk about your day, you know?
My husband and I do the same thing, and we implemented it. It sounds exactly like you guys, but Monday to Thursday. And I do find it allows for that point of connection, right? Like my husband works outside of the house. So when he gets home, you're really sitting there present. You put the phone away. You're also sitting there. Like I find in my life, I've had such trouble when I'm eating a meal in front of the TV. It's so passive, right? Like you're not even tasting the food.
Just, yeah.
Totally. So it allows for mindfulness when you're actually sitting at a table, which sounds crazy because it's so simple. Like both these shifts are so simple.
Sure.
Such an impact.
But we've all gotten in such a place of doing the other things, I think. And on the table too, I'll say for lunch, my husband now works from home. We both work from home. So we're in separate offices during the day. But at lunch, I'm trying to be like, I'll be like, hey, I'm putting a salad together. Do you want me to put anything? And then we'll stop the work day and sit too. So all around, everybody put your phones out of the room, sit down at the dinner table. It's going to be good for you. I promise. Now, listen, tell us the story about Plant You. How did this blog that has become such a powerful tool for so many and transformed lives come to fruition for you?
Yeah. So I'll start at the beginning. So when I was 11 years old, my dad was diagnosed with stage 2 colon cancer, unfortunately, very prevalent in my family. And he went through chemo and surgery, the whole bit, very traumatic as a kid. And then nobody at the time mentioned diet. So I'm from Canada. We were eating the standard Canadian diet, which I don't know if you would know the Health Canada food chart, but it had like a big chunk for dairy and a big chunk for meat. That was what was recommended that we eat. So my parents were doing the best they could. And we never ate a vegan meal in our lives. And it wasn't until 2015, the World Health Organization came out with this breaking news that red and processed meat were now classed as group 2 and group 1 carcinogens. And I remember just being really shocked by that, especially having this cancer in my background and thinking, wow, I had no idea that there was a connection to what we ate in colon cancer. So I was really grateful at the time. My parents and I shifted towards a plant predominant diet and I went vegan. And I, again, had never cooked a vegan meal in my life, but I started documenting the journey. So at the time, I was living up in Northern Ontario, living in a small, tiny bachelor's apartment, working as a radio host, actually.
Amazing. And, love that.
This is giving me the radio vibes right here. Yeah. I started just documenting the journey on Instagram. So I would be like, okay, I'm trying this today, or I'm cooking up some broccoli, or I'm trying tofu for the first time, and slowly but surely gained a following. And it happened, for lack of better terms, organically. And up until 2019, when I left my job. So I was able to leave my job in 2019, now working in marketing at a hospital, totally different.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had started a meal plan subscription service. So it was like I would send out a weekly meal idea list with recipes. It wasn't like a regimented meal plan or anything. And people would pay $7.99 per month to subscribe. And it was called the Plant Ahead Meal Plan by Plant You. And
Very good.
It took off to the point where I was then able to leave my job in 2019, then sign the book deal, then Amazing. The whole thing just got rolling, and now I'm on this podcast with you. So
and then oops, New York Times bestseller. Oops, that happened, you know. So amazing. And just both books are so good. And you get, and now yes, here you are in this podcast. This is the height, you know.
It is.
Right here. This is it.
It is. It's the most fun, I'll tell you that.
I ask all my guests this. I'm curious, when you got into vegan cooking, you know, a lot of people, especially now, are diving into blogs a lot. And sometimes that's the answer here. But I'm curious, since it's a cookbook podcast, is there a cookbook that resonated for you first that you remember cooking out of a lot? And if the answer is a blog, that's fine too. But I really am curious if there was a cookbook at all.
Yeah, I hadn't really cooked from cookbooks too much. And I think I just hadn't gotten into it until I wrote my own. But someone who was really inspiring to me is Lauren Toyota from Hot for Food.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with. She's a wonderful person. And she's Canadian as well. And I had seen her get laid off. This was like over a decade ago, from MTV, and then just pursue Hot for Food. And I was like, this is the coolest person, the coolest job in the world. Inspiring millions of people to eat vegan. So I remember I got her cookbook. But the thing that really made me want to write a cookbook was because I had this visual idea in my head. And you would know what I'm talking about now because you have my books, but the infographics with the ingredients on the top and the finished dish on the bottom.
Obsessed.
Yeah. I just felt like for some reason this made sense in my brain to be the most simplistic way to lay out a recipe possible. And I later found out I had ADHD. So I'm like, okay, so maybe this is like something.
Interesting.
Yes. Because I get a lot of messages from, unexpectedly, parents with kids who say the kids love the books. Don't have kids myself, so I had no idea. And sure. Then second of all, neurodivergent people. So ADHD, autism, they say like the book is one of the only ones that they can cook from just because of the visual element. Which seems insane. But so that's why I really wanted to write it, because I'm like, there's something here that makes this simple. And if my goal is to help people eat more plants, then I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it obviously resonated, at least with
some.
Yeah,
it did. I mean, that's one of the coolest things about this. I mean, among many cool things about both books, but everyone, listeners, when you open up a page to a recipe, and I'm going to show it for anyone that's watching the video, you've got photos of not just the recipe, but all of the ingredients that are also included. So if you are someone who is very visual, which almost everyone who picks up a cookbook is like, why isn't there, like mine, yours has a picture for every recipe, I think.
Or
Mind you not, I have not had the delight of that, but I definitely get the comment all the time that's like, why isn't there a picture for every single recipe? And I'm like, because sometimes choices have to be made. I'm sorry. Yeah. And this goes above and beyond because you got a picture of the ingredients for everyone. So for people that are visual, this is just like a dream come true. You don't have to guess at anything. You can really look at a page, because lots of times too, I think for the home cook, you look at a recipe, even if it's minimal ingredients, minimal procedure, you kind of look and you're like, ah, words, and then I have to put all that together into a thing. Instead, everybody, you can open one of Carly's books, look at a page, and literally look at all the ingredients and go, oh wait, I have that, without having to read anything. Like, that's magical. It's really
that was the whole goal. And it's funny, because when I was writing my second book, the first thing my publisher said to me, they're like, it needs to be in the same layout. And I'm like, don't worry, it's going to be in the same infographic layout, but you do have to sacrifice a bit of that beauty of a cookbook and the shots. So there's a little bittersweetness there, because I feel like I'm now stuck in this layout, which is fine. I'm grateful to hopefully be having an impact, but it's kind of funny to talk about.
It's so interesting you say that, because I'm on the flip side where I go in taking food photography, right? I'm like, wow, she's got this template she gets to stick to. And but I can see how then also the flip side is like, oh, at times that might feel limiting, because like I have this vision for this specific dish I want to roll into, right? So I can see exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Both sides. Grass is always greener, right?
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
And I didn't think about that at all, though. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because if you think about even photographing a salad or a pasta dish, like a salad, you might want to put on a beautiful like wood table and then have like an avocado at the side and whatever else. And like, I'm like, okay, we're shooting on a white background.
Yep.
And now we're going to shoot all the individual ingredients. So, I mean, like I said, there's no complaints, but it is kind of something I wrestle with the future of my books. Is this it? Is this what I will always do? No.
You are an expansive human being. I can tell this about you already. So this is this is just part. This is part of this identity right now. You'll be able to, you know, branch out more if you want to down the road. I think that's my personal prediction for you, but I am not a psychic, so who knows? But everybody, we're talking about her first book right now. I'm going to say it again. The New York Times bestselling Plant You, 140 ridiculously easy, amazingly delicious plant-based oil-free recipes. I tore through this. I couldn't decide what to make first. I landed on the peanut butter thumbprint cookies because my husband loves thumbprint cookies. So I was kind of like, let me see something easy, quick, which is a lot of the recipes in here. So easy. But these were irresistible, rich and nutty with, you know, the sweet strawberry chia jam you've gotten here. Home run, husband approved. And he really is sort of a thumbprint cookie aficionado. Is there a recipe from this first book that you've learned to be a fan favorite, something that people are making the most, or a couple recipes from here people are making the most?
Yeah, it's the Can't Believe It's Vegan lasagna. People just make it. It has a beautiful tofu ricotta and then like a garden bolognese sauce with the hidden veggies. And I get messages about this recipe all the time. And I think it's probably because people will feed it to non-plant-based people and then they'll still like it. They won't realize it doesn't have cheese in it. And tofu is really cool that way. Like how crazy versatile it is. Yeah. Like it can turn into cheese, it can turn into meat, it can turn into a dessert. So I think that's the one I get the most messages about.
Yeah, I'm glad tofu is kind of I feel like in a way it's lost like the stigma that it used to have because people have realized how magical it is. And I have a thing for lasagna, so I will definitely be checking that recipe out as well. But let's shift gears, shall we, to your brand new book that is actually on the day this episode comes out, it will be your pub day, my dear. So congratulations and happy pub day to you early, but also on the day we're coming out here. So it works out, you know. The book is called Plant You. Make sure I'm lined up there. Great. Plant You Scrappy Cooking, 140 plus plant-based zero waste recipes that are good for you, your wallet, and the planet. The idea for this book came from your wildly popular Scrappy Cooking series on social media. The cookbook is packed with plant-based recipes that show the reader how to make the most of the food they have in the fridge and pantry with easy, approachable vegan recipes anyone can make. Darling, please tell us about the orange peel story, where this came about.
Yeah. So after I published my first cookbook, I learned a statistic that like stopped me in my tracks. And that was that 30 to 40% of food in the US that's produced goes to waste. And immediately my mind went to, okay, like it probably decomposes, no big deal. But actually, when food ends up in landfills, it emits a powerful greenhouse gas called methane. And to put this into perspective, food waste contributes more emissions than the entire airline industry. So we're all going on about like Taylor Swift and her flights. Meanwhile, food waste is something we never hear in a conversation about environment. Mm-hmm. So I just felt like I needed to start talking about it. And I threw up a orange peel candy recipe one day, called it Scrappy Cooking, walked away from my phone and came back an hour later and millions of people had viewed the video. There were so many people just loving the concept, talking about food waste, and it really got me excited. And I immediately in my head was like, this would make a great cookbook. Like this is practical. And not only I like to bring up, not only is there an environmental equation here, but when we think about inflation and grocery prices just being astronomical, if the average American family is throwing out roughly 30% of their food, $1,500 worth of food in a year, we can really kind of close that inflation gap if we start thinking about our food and reducing waste. So very passionate about it and wrote a whole cookbook on it.
Yes, yes.
Which we're now holding. So
rightfully so. I mean, when people hear that information, I hope that it becomes a no-brainer to get this book, because Carly has become the scrappy chef to watch, and now she's allowing you to become the scrappy chef at home as well. So let's dive right in. In the introduction, you tell the reader that this book isn't about being perfect, which I love. It's the exact opposite. Describe to our listeners what you mean by that.
Yeah. So I feel like people watch my page and they're like, this girl probably wastes no food, is the absolute perfect, like zero waste kind of monolith. And I even waste food today as I'm talking to you on this podcast about reducing waste. eating plant-based, reducing food waste, they can be two things that are so much fun. I always say plant-based cooking was one of my greatest gifts I've come across in life because the stakes are so low. When you're cooking a plant-based meal, it's almost therapeutic. And I find that you can interchange ingredients, you can screw something up and you can save it. You're not cooking chicken and worried about salmonella and undercooking it. Yes, and all that.
Big yes to that.
And the same thing goes for reducing waste. So I want to really empower people to be able to interchange vegetables within recipes to what they have on hand, to look at their carrot tops and think, I can throw this into a pesto. So that's what I mean. Don't have to be perfect. It's supposed to be fun. It's not all like statistics and kind of doomsday, even though we just talked about the statistics. But once you have that information, I think you can really use it to propel yourself forward in your cooking journey.
Absolutely. And listen, it's this idea of perfection. The whole world got caught onto it at some point. If we're all just trying to be a little better every day, that's kind of the best we can do.
Exactly.
Nobody's perfect out there. So items like this really just help us make some better choices. And you can make some choices as you implement items like this as you move forward to help you be that little bit better every day. So it's perfect. And this isn't just about the recipes in the book. You have a fabulous intro where you dive into the stats that you just talked about as well. You get to share all of that with us in here. Proper ways to store food, covering a variety of ingredients. You talk about the problem of over purchasing, something I am definitely guilty of and trying to be better at. You even get into best before dates, imperfect produce, composting, and setting up your kitchen to succeed in scrappy cooking. And you have a fabulous four-page layout in this where you list the ingredients that are most commonly wasted with the home cook, and everyone can look here at the ingredients by picture again, and we're getting a list of recipes with each ingredient that corresponds with the ingredient. So it is literally, I mean, maybe you should describe it because I feel like I'm butchering. I want listeners to really understand what they're looking at here.
Yeah, I like to call it a visual index. So it's a have this, make that index. So basically, it's exactly, Dustin, what you said. It has like a picture of bread, an icon of bread,
yes.
And then it lists all the recipes that you can use bread that's about to go bad in. So the goal here was to have people, okay, they're opening their fridge and they see that they have kind of wilting spinach in the back of the fridge. Okay, what can I use my wilting greens for? Open that index, look and see a list of recipes and choose one to make. So really beyond really scrappy things like banana peel bacon and watermelon rind pickles, which I have both in the book as well. I wanted the recipes to be really practical and mirror the simplicity of my first book, but be very customizable because I think one of the barriers to food waste is people get very stuck on recipes. They get very stuck on, okay, I'm going to make this recipe. I need to run to the store and grab a butternut squash when they already have two sweet potatoes.
Yes.
So it really encourages, a lot of the recipes are really just fundamental recipes like curries, stews, mains, where you can interchange because that's how I cook in my life. Whenever I'm looking at a recipe, I inevitably change everything up based on what I have.
Yep. That's great. And that's a great just sort of tip for everyone at home. And what you're going to get in this book is like really utilizing, looking at that recipe and going, oh, it needs this, but I don't have that. I have this, but it's almost kind of like that. How can I put this to play in here and actually get a final product that's going to be delicious? And also play with your food, everybody. Don't be afraid to play with your food. Sometimes you got to make some mistakes to learn things, and it's worth it in the long run because the next time you go back to make it, you're like, oh, I did that once and it didn't work. So now I'm going to do something else.
What's been your biggest recipe fail? And then I'll share mine because I love this question and I love hearing the answer.
Oh my gosh. I can't. Why don't you share yours with me while I think? There's just been so many.
Okay. So when I was testing the vegan meatloaf recipe for my first cookbook, it would not mold. Like it would not stay. So I would like get it out of the pan and then it would just crumble. And I tested, I kid you not, probably 9 of these meatloafs. And my husband, fiance at the time, God knows why he married me after this, he ate every vegan meatloaf and he will not have vegan meatloaf now. Like it was of those things where I was just like day in, day out, honey, he's home. We got vegan meatloaf and it was like mushy.
Oh, meatloaf.
Yeah. But I eventually did get it. There is a good vegan meatloaf recipe in my first book. Although since publishing, I haven't made it because there's been no requests. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, nobody in my home wants this meatloaf anymore. I will not be making it. That is so funny. My husband is of course my number one taste tester as well. And there was a period where I was trying to perfect a Caesar dressing and it would be like, I was up like buzzing around at 5 a.m. and he'd come out, you know, after taking a shower and I'd be like, can you try the Caesar dressing? He's like,
in the morning,
7 a.m. Like, what do you mean? Like, I just saw you put a tablespoon of capers in that. What are you doing to me? But then you would try it. It was very sweet. I've just had so many. I am thinking of when you said that there was this it was almost like a loaf. I was trying to do like a holiday loaf that was all allergen friendly and just, you know, it was all chickpeas and oats essentially.
Last meal probably.
Oh yes, and it just tasted like garbage. No matter what I did to it, I was like, I can't get past this. Like, it's not, you know, or if I'd season it with something, then all I would taste was the seasoning. Like, I probably made it like 6 times and finally I was like, I think this is maybe not meant to be.
You know? It's always the chickpea, flax, oat type of loafs. Like,
yep. Yep.
It's maybe we're just pushing the envelope too far here.
A skosh too far. I eventually did something like a variation of it that was like a sort of the same mixture, but with a lot of barbecue sauce mixed in it. And I was like, barbecue chickpea burgers. Great. There we go. And I was like, now how can I get this to the other place? But you know, sometimes you just gotta let it go. Oh goodness. Well, please forgive me if I steal that question in the future. I think that's a great one for other guests on the podcast and I love it, love it, love it. And now I'm just trying to think of all the things I've ever met. There's so much, right? You're recipe testing all the time. That's the interesting. Listeners, if you're following us on Instagram and you think everything we make is perfection and beautiful, there's a lot to get to that point.
Yeah, especially baking recipes. Like, as someone who's not a natural baker, that takes a lot, right? Like, you need to use a base recipe that's like tried and true and then experimenting from there. But it took me a while to learn that I needed to do that. I'm like, baking soda, baking powder, oh, it'll rise. Like, it's just baking is a science where you do have to usually follow the recipe.
That is true. And things like, do you use agar that much?
Oh, I have. And
I feel like you're feeling me on this.
Yeah, it can go so wrong. It can go so wrong. It's like, so for anybody listening, if you don't know what agar is, I think it's a seaweed, but it's plant-based. Vegans use it as a gelatin substitute.
Yep.
But it doesn't always gel like you would think gelatin does. It can so easily, you're like slightly off in your measurements and suddenly you have something that's like as hard as glass.
So hard. And you're like, oh, oops. Okay. I kind of move on from those right away. I've done them from other people's books where I've made the recipes. Sometimes it's gone great. Other times,
Sometimes it goes great.
And I'm like, this is it. I know how to use agar now like a champion. I'm going to make so many recipes with it. And then, you know, life unfolds and it doesn't work out that way for me. Or I have someone's recipe and it's kind of okay. So I've had different variations of it, but you know, listeners, give it a try, give it a shot. We need to talk about the most beautiful thing in this book.
Oh, Tut. My cat, King Tut. He is a fan favorite. I get so many messages from my first book. People are like, love the photos of Tut. Love the photos of Tut. That's like the number one. I'm like, what about the recipes?
Yeah.
Love the photos of Tut.
So. Well, I particularly love this glamour shot. In the It is so gorgeous. And I wanted to show you in my last book, I made sure.
Yes!
I was like, I've got to get my dog in there. So everybody, I'm showing Carly a picture of my dog in my last book.
Okay,
I was
clarify.
Just so excited.
Are those four puppies or
yes, they're Mr. Benson's puppy bites. But I see, that's the thing. I was like, oh, I sort of had to trick my publisher into it. I was like, I was like, well, they're named after him. So obviously I have to have a picture of him in there then, you know, or else I don't know if they would have went for it. But yeah, those are Mr. Benson's.
I'm obsessed. That's so, so cute.
Well, in your book, scrappy cooking. You talk about getting weird in the kitchen, embracing that decapitated stalk of broccoli, wilted spinach, half bell pepper, and so much more that we all inevitably find ourselves with at some point. So let's get weird. Let's get scrappy. Chapter one starts out with scrappy sunrises. Do you have a go-to breakfast that made it into this chapter?
Yes. So definitely the overnight oats, fruity overnight oats and chia pudding. So I provide like two different options and really love to do this. You take like any fruit that you have on hand and blend it almost into like a smoothie consistency. And then you use that to make these colorful, beautiful overnight oats or chia pudding. So I provide both options, make that all the time. One that's really handy is I have a French toast casserole. The name is escaping me. I don't know if I just called it a French toast casserole.
Last week's loaf breakfast casserole. I'm so glad you brought it up because let's get into it. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, yeah. So this is great one. Bread is the number one most wasted food in the world, which is kind of shocking because as a bread lover myself, but I think what happens is people go to the bakery, they bring the bread home, and then it gets hard really quickly. So if you encounter yourself with this issue, you can make the last week's loaf breast bread casserole and tear up the chunks, put it into a casserole dish, add a beautiful custard made of plant-based milk and vegan yogurt, and it will rehydrate the bread into like a French toast substitute.
Mm. And I got to tell you, when we're talking about the photo situation for this, so what I loved about the last week's loaf breakfast casserole, so sometimes when you look at photos, everybody, and they are like a heavily stylized photo in a book, you lose sight of the actual food. So that is another plus side to the way your food is photographed for this book is I turned to the page and I was like, all I saw was this beautiful piece from a casserole. And I was like, I want that immediately. That looks so good.
I'm so glad.
First of all, I love bread. So, you know, why not? But also just the, like you're saying, you come home, the bread gets hard, and then ways to utilize it. People don't think of rehydrating the bread like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's such a great way to use that up. You've got common ground granola in here. Now for that, the overnight oats, then when you're saying you blend up the fruit, so you're, that essentially comes about if we're seeing some fruit, maybe that's about to go bad.
Yeah, exactly. I think we all buy fresh fruit, berries. I'm a huge raspberry lover. All our berries in the winter here are imported from Mexico usually. And by the time you get them home, I find you've got like one day. You've got one day to eat them before they start going mushy. So this is a great way to utilize any fruit. Yep. But really, like, there's a lot of scrappy. So the common ground granola uses spent coffee grounds. So good. It adds like a mocha chocolate vibe. But a lot of the recipes are really staples because I want people to just like learn that, okay, I'm looking in my fridge. I've got these, I don't know, even peaches or mango that's about to go bad. Well, I can throw it in the blender and oh yeah, I can make those overnight oats. So that's kind of where my mind was going. Well, adding in the fun scrappy ones.
Yeah, it's so good. And lots of other great options in this scrappy sunrises too. We got berry baked oatmeal, super seedy granola bars, brown banana muffins, death by chocolate flapjacks. Again, this photo, drooling, looking at it, so good. Fritzy fritters, eggless omelet, grab and glow burrito, cultured vegan yogurt, two-way bacon street, juicer-free green juice. You got some great smoothies in here with some health benefits in them for everybody. And that takes us into chapter two, which is scrappetizers and sides. I'm obsessed with this name. I laughed so hard when I read it. It's something about, first of all, the word scrappy. And then when you combine it with anything else, I'm like, that just works. I love it so much. It's brilliant. What is a scrappetizer or side you could serve from this chapter at a party that is surefire for even the pickiest eaters?
Yeah, so there's some good ones in here. The one that people always love is if you're someone who peels your potatoes and you throw the peels, don't do that anymore. Give them a rinse and toss in a little bit of olive oil, nutritional yeast, sea salt, and you can pop them in the oven or the air fryer for about 15 to 20 minutes and you'll have like the crispiest chips. They're so, so good. Okay. Another one that I love is that made it into this chapter. I like to call a scrappaccia. It's a twist on a scarpaccia. And it's this amazing like flatbread thing. So you slice up zucchini, you drain it, you've got the leftover water, you're mixing that, the water with the chickpea flour, and then adding onion and zucchini slices in. You can add basically any vegetable to this as well. And then you pop it in the oven, and it makes this like delicious flatbread that will fly off the table.
Mm, I love it. And this whole chapter, that the scarpaccia, I saw it and I thought, oh, is that, I hadn't heard of scarpaccia. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then when I saw scarpaccia, I saw, oh, is it focaccia? And then I turned to the page and I was like, oh, it's like a zucchini cake. Like, yeah. This is amazing. And it looked so yummy and delicious. And we got some other great ones in there. Also, the tip on the peels with the potato, everybody, you got to get into it. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember eating potato skins, the chip. Do you remember that?
No, really, I don't, but I can imagine.
I mean, it's junk. It's garbage, right? But it's got that potato crunch. These are such a better version of exactly. That, you know, it's so nice to be able to make those out of your scraps. You're not tossing anything away. So we've got Fiesta fries in here. We got the beet chips, crispy crunchies. You said the dill pickle chips, the need for flatbread. It's a flax wrap, save the seeds, cornmeal biscuits, which looks so yummy. And sweet and spicy carrot showstopper. What's the sweet and spicy carrot showstopper? Yeah.
This is a great side dish. So it's these beautiful, like maple caramelized carrots served over a bed of my whipped feta dip, which is another delicious recipe I have in the book, and then finished off with white beans. If you want to make it more of a complete meal, it's so good. Delicious. Great for like what I would envision on a Thanksgiving or Christmas side dish.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And another one we haven't mentioned in here, but I want to say it because everyone's going to want it. Greek lemon smash potatoes. Okay. I'm going to set that there and I'm going to move into chapter 3. With superb soups. Are you a soup all year round kind of gal or only soup in the winter?
I wanted at one point to write a full soup cookbook, but then I remember that people live in like warm places all year round. So maybe it wouldn't sell too well, but it's not off the table for me. I love soup. I love soup. And I feel like soup can be so healthy and it's so easy. They're usually one pot. This might be my favorite chapter in the book because I just made the dilly soup yesterday. It's this amazing soup that has orzo and pickle juice. It sounds weird, and you make it creamy with tahini. It's so good. It's like the best soup ever. Are you a soup all year round?
Oh yes, all year round. I love it. I want it all the time. I'm just looking at you, and I are twinning incredibly. I think I have a recipe called Scrappy Broth.
Oh, yay!
I'm like, oh my gosh, we need to meet in person and cook because it's going to be aligned. Absolutely. I feel like that's fantastic. You have a scrappy broth in here, which I love, which I assume is taking all the good scraps she got laying around and making some broth out of it, right? I feel like that's such a good use for scraps.
Yeah, this is one of my biggest cooking tips is I like to put a bowl out when I'm cooking and just put like my onion peels, carrot peels, if you're peeling your carrots, your garlic peels all into a bowl. Transfer that to a reusable freezer bag that you store in your freezer. When it's full, you can just dump it into a stock pot, add water over top until it reaches like whatever height you want, basically. It'll be fine. And then I like to add a little turmeric and black pepper. Call it a day and you've got like a glorious mineral rich broth. And I like to say it's like a vegan bone broth because you think of all the minerals that come from stuff like onion skins and carrot peels. It's just super nutrient dense as well.
Yeah, that's great. You've got another broth in here that I thought was so creative. Oh, yes. The Cobby chicken broth with corn cobs.
Yeah. So this is like my take on a chicken broth because you use the corn cobs that are like cleared off once you're done with the corn and you soak them for hours, like a bay leaf, again, turmeric, garlic, black pepper. And it really becomes this like umami rich chicken-y broth that is so good. And a great way to use those leftover stocks.
I love that. I love that. And so many other great soups in here. Everybody, whatever sheet pan soup, Just give us a glimpse of that then, please.
Yeah. So there's about 25 recipes in the book that are earmarked as Kitchen Raid recipes. Great. So this is what I liked when I've talked about this, I think several times in the podcast, where I'm like, interchange ingredients. So this is a Kitchen Raid recipe. So literally you can take butternut squash, sweet potato, pumpkin, throw it on a sheet pan with onions and carrots, and then roast it in the oven, then transfer to your blender with garlic and blend it up, and you've got a beautiful soup. But it's meant to be just like very customizable. And I like to top it, if you have this accessible to you, with my beet leaf chips, or you can use kale chips, and it adds like a crunchiness to this smooth butternut squash everything soup.
So good.
Whatever soup. Yeah.
What a great way to get it all in there. We got Green Goddess soup, Raid the Fridge noodle soup. See where that's going. Roasted tomato soup with crispy quinoa, leaky Tuscan minestrone, caramelized French onion soup. So many good ones in here. Now we're on to sustainable Sammy's wraps and salads. Is there a favorite recipe in this chapter someone might toss together for meal prep, maybe?
Meal prep. That's a good question. So I have this great chickpea tuna salad sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I named these things. My mind was going crazy.
Well, listen, this is the point where like your brain's probably mush about it, right? You've done nothing but eat and sleep and dream this book up for the last probably 2 years. So no worries.
So I can picture all the recipes in my mind, but
exactly.
This is basically a chickpea tuna salad sandwich. And again, we use pickle juice, or you can use white beans. So I use white beans or chickpeas. Again, it's super customizable. And I think this is a fabulous meal prep friendly recipe. You throw all of that in the food processor with artichokes, marinated artichokes, and it creates like this flaky, and nori sheets, and it creates this flaky, like tuna-ish stuff. So you can either put that in a wrap or put it in a sandwich, and it's so delicious.
Oh, that's great. There's so many great items in here. We've got broccoli stem summer rolls, making use of that broccoli stem.
Yeah, that's another good one too.
Very good. Celery leaf tabbouleh, life-altering Mediterranean wraps, sprout-a-choke wrap. Tell me about the sprout-a-choke wrap.
This one is so good. So I'm a huge fan of sprouts and sprouting. So have you ever sprouted before?
No. Well, quinoa I've sprouted to make the Rejuvenac?
I've never sprouted quinoa. So this is new to me.
Smelly situation.
I like to sprout lentils, and this is like a Green Goddess wrap with lentil sprouts and edamame, and everything is green. I wanted something like when you mix it in a bowl, it's all the green things. So it's got lentil sprouts, edamame, a Green Goddess dressing, greens, and you mix it up and it just looks vibrant. And then you all wrap it in a wrap, slice it in half. And you know, when something just looks like healthy and fresh, that's this recipe. And then it hits your mouth and it's so fresh and delicious. So
lots of great textures in there.
Yeah, lots of great textures.
Oh,
one of my favorites, actually. That'd be good for meal prep too.
And we've got Beaming Lentil Lemon Salad, Strawberry Farro Salad. I'm into that. I like to find new ways to use farro, so that's lovely. Pantry Bean Salad, Street Corn Pasta Salad, Brussels Sprouts Caesar Salad, the Saucy Kale, That's a Panzanella, Grilled Romaine Salad, Citrus Cabbage Slaw, Buffalo Chickpea Lettuce Cups. Listeners, get into it. Chapter 5, a chapter everybody can get into. It's No Waste Noodles. So nudes, I love a chapter dedicated to pasta. 100%. Is there a recipe from this chapter? Someone who just picks up the book today, something from this chapter you would recommend they make first?
Yeah, so it's my favorite recipe in the book. Could be biased because I'm just like obsessed with pasta, but it's the lemon peel pesto. And it is so good. So basically what you do is you take your lemon and you use a potato peeler or a sharp knife, and you cut off like the outsides of the lemon, avoiding the pith if you can, because the first time I tested this recipe, I threw that was another failure, actually. She was bitter.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You avoid the pith, and then put those lemon peels in a blender with soaked cashews, garlic, or sunflower seeds. I love sunflower seeds, As an alternative to cashews, because they are so much cheaper, and often people have cashews allergies, I've found in my journey. So anyways, you can use cashews as well. Nutritional yeast, you blend it up. It makes the most luscious. If you like citrus, you're going to love this. It makes the most luscious, like Alfredo lemony sauce. And it's based off of a pesto recipe that I had in my first book, which is why I called it pesto. So I basically replaced the basil with lemon peels.
Great.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
I love a lemon pasta. Just like in the last couple of years, I'm like, why was I snoozing on lemon pasta? Like that citrus hit from lemon specifically in pasta. Oh, it's so good.
So good. So
delicious. So good. All right. So in this chapter, we've got Tuscan sweet potato gnocchi, hot pink pasta, the whole darn squash pasta, skillet lasagna, one pan. Oh, you're coming at us again. Everyone, she's giving you another lasagna. So if you were a favorite.
The skillet lasagna. So good.
Yes.
Give me another favorite.
First book, we got this one now.
Yeah.
So good. One pan orzo casserole, vodka penne with broccolini, 15-minute lemon pepper Alfredo, getting into that lemon again. Rock your brock mac and cheese. We got Sunday sauce in here. And then we're going into the main bowls chapter. What's your favorite main bowl?
Main bowl, my favorite one is probably the microbiome bowl. And this is, again, is a, like a really cool, beautiful bowl where you just like pack everything in. And I was inspired by the thought of like going to somewhere like Erewhon, which I've never been in my life. We have like a couple of Whole Foods in Canada, but I see people go to Erewhon and they get like bowls of beautiful stuff.
I'm so curious.
So this is inspired by that vibe. It's just like a bowl packed with beautiful things. So we've got like potatoes, lentil sprouts, wild rice with a beautiful like green goddess dressing. So I have about probably 6 to 8 dressings that I repeat throughout the book, so that if you make one, you can use it in multiple different recipes. But the green goddess dressing is one of my favorites. And it's just delicious. And it's great. To your point of meal prep, it's a great meal prep recipe.
Well, and I love this chapter. I feel like this is a handful of favorites in here. So it's not fair for me to sort of say, what's your favorite one? Because it's a tight selection of flavorful and gorgeous bowls. So I think that's a good one. You know, people, they're going to dig into everything in this book. But I think that I love having a bowl for dinner too. So I can see myself, you know, just picking one of these every now and then, having it for dinner. Chapter 7 is chock full of mouthwatering mains that make use of everything in the kitchen with eco entrees. Now, this is an exciting chapter as it's really putting everything to use. Is there a recipe from here that your recipe testers maybe seem to scream and shout, yes, yes, this one, they like the most?
Need to think about that for a second. Which one stood out the most? So I was lucky that I was able to hire a recipe tester for this book. So she made every recipe in the book and she provided brutal feedback. What Amazing. Did not have that luxury for my first. And it was anxiety inducing because when I put the book out, I'm like, oh goodness, I'm the only one. And my husband who says everything is good.
Right.
I'm trying to think if she had any distinct that she was like going crazy over. She really loved the curries. And I mean, I'm a huge curry person. We at least have curry one day a week. And specifically one that I love and she loved as well was the peanut butter curry. So it's a beautiful peanut red curry sauce.
Delicious.
So good. And again, you can use just about any vegetable in it. I have chickpeas in it, bell peppers. It's just fresh, delicious, great served over rice, great served on its own, like a soup or with naan. It's delish.
You just said naan and I just flipped back to your scrap appetizer and sides because even though it's the need for flatbread in here, I just saw it's like two ingredients. I'm like, I think I'm getting right off this and making that when I'm done. It just, plus then some curry to dip it in. Come on. So in this eco entrees chapter, everybody, I want you, there's so many beautiful things in this book. So I'm gonna read off some recipes just so you get a good idea of what's in here. We got the firecracker tofu with coconut rice, zucchini falafel fritters, any vegetable curry, perfect peanut butter curry, the one you mentioned there, the pollock paneer, golden immunity stew, spicy eggplant and white bean stew, pickled Tennessee tenders. Tell us more, please. Pickled Tennessee tenders.
Those are tofu tenders that are marinated in pickle juice. and they're so good. And then you bread them, and then you put them in your favorite hot sauce, and then you dip them in like a Caesar dressing, vegan Caesar dressing, which I have in the book.
My face, everybody, I was just like, what? Because I just think it's so genius. Also, Carly, I have a question for you. Do you like dill?
I know, there's so much dill. Dill and tahini. I had to like, I was making recipes and I'm like, every recipe I'm putting tahini in. So I had to control myself, but inevitably it still like permeated a lot of the recipes. So
I'm obsessed with dill. Like I'll look through a section and I'll be like, ooh, dill this. And it's just something I love it so much. I'm like, I don't think I have utilized, like I'm now questioning my culinary choices up to this point. I'm like, I have not utilized dill to its full capabilities at all. So you're really showing the way here. I love it.
It's so funny because with my first book, I got this review this one time and it was this woman who wrote, gave a 1-star review, of course, and said she uses way too much garlic. There's garlic in every recipe. And I'm like, and I'm like, you just gave them ammunition. It's going to be like, there is dill in every recipe.
I champion it. 5 stars on both for me. I'm here for the garlic and here for the dill. Everybody getting into that flavor sensation. We're doing it with Plant U. Stuffed cabbage dumplings we got in here. Oh, okay. Can't miss miso cabbage steaks. Bang bang. I love a cabbage steak. Bang bang broccoli. Bring broccoli-licious.
Yeah. Bring
my eyes right now. I almost said broccoli claws. I don't know why. And I was like, is that Santa Claus broccoli? So bang, bang, broccoli-licious steaks. Tell me about those.
Those are just incredible. I love a broccoli steak. You just peel off the really hard outer edge of the broccoli stems, which by the way, if you're buying broccoli, the stems are so delicious, edible, nutrient dense. Don't pay for your broccoli by weight and pay for the stems and then throw them away. So they're just whole broccoli that is like sliced in half and then served over this incredible red sauce. It's just delicious. Tender, juicy. Great. Could serve as a side dish, or you could add like some beans for a main or serve over rice.
Have you ever eaten at Dirt Candy in New York?
What is a Dirt Candy?
I believe still there. I think it was vegetarian. I think it's vegan now.
Oh, it's a restaurant. Yeah. I thought it was a food item. I thought you said, have you ever eaten one? And I'm like,
that's why I loved the, when you were like, what is a Dirt Candy? And I was like, well, that's so funny. But they do a lot of the food is based out of, you know, they'll have like a chocolate cake that's like an onion tart chocolate cake. Ooh. You know, but I remember I had a broccoli hot dog when I was there, I think is what I had. So.
Was it good?
So I had it. That's I mean, I don't want to be shady. I guess I just was. It was not my favorite thing. I'll just say that, you know, but I also applauded the use of a broccoli stalk. So I thought I was intrigued by it for sure. You know,
hysterical. Have you been to ABCV?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love that restaurant.
The last time we were there, they had a dessert special that was a peanut butter mochi. It was gone in 2 seconds from our, and it was like it wasn't a tiny one. It was like a decent size one. And my husband and I were just like, oh, a little bite. And then we were like, oh my goodness. Yeah. And the waiter came around the corner and they were like, oh my gosh. And we were like, sorry, it was good. I don't know what to tell you. Like we were excited. It was not a savory moment. It was a must have more of this now moment.
That's the thing about that place. If anybody's listening, it is like a must go. Yeah. I feel like if you're in New York, but the serving sizes are not massive. So like if you get a little like peanut butter dessert,
right,
you're limited, but yes, it's delicious. Everything is so good.
Also on that note, don't be afraid to order that. If there, you see something you like on the menu, it's an experience to go there. Just order it up and do it. Well, we get saucy with chapter 9, dressings, dips, and saucy things. And we're a saucy household. So is there one in here that came to mind first as a must have in this chapter when you like one that you keep on the regular that was like, oh yeah, well that's going in this book, obviously.
Yeah. One we make all the time is scrappy pesto. And this was really from this desire for people to be able to use up their greens. Because I think so often people well-intentioned buy like a box of spinach for the week and it's wilting in the back of their fridge, or they buy kale. So it's this really customizable pesto recipe where you can whip it up with any green you have on hand, including radish chops. I originally designed it as a radish chop pesto recipe. And then over time, I'm like, okay, wait, any green can go into this. So, and sorry if you hear noise in the background, Tut and my puppy are racing.
I love it. The noises that are most welcome on this podcast are animal noises. So it is fine.
So that was the one where we make it all the time. I think it's a great, really versatile recipe that can be used for so many things. So you can pour that into a pasta. You can use it as a dip. You can drizzle it on like a cauliflower steak. It's really, really good.
I love it. I love it. I love it. What are some, this book's coming out. What do you think is something that you put into the dressing zips and saucy things that might resonate with everyone the most? What do you think is going to be a go-to one for them? What do you predict?
The one that immediately comes to mind, because you've been talking about Caesar dressing, is the hummus Caesar. And it doesn't sound appealing when I say it, but trust me, you will be shocked when you dilute hummus with some vinegar, add caper juice, the whole thing, do it up with some spices. It is like a 5-second Caesar dressing. So that's one I think that is like very usable for people that they'll love.
And that sounds along the lines. So for listeners that are perhaps have not followed Plant You yet, but I'm sure you are by now, the peanut butter jar.
Yeah.
My goodness, I love seeing you with that every time. And is that what the hummus one aligns with? Sort of like the scraps of the hummus left. So what are we going to do with it? We're going to make a dressing.
Exactly. It's just utilizing whatever hummus you have on hand to make a dressing. And it's so easy. And
that's great.
I have an everything tahini dressing, which as we've covered, can go over everything. So that's one I really like. And then you can add like some sriracha for a spicy kick to it. Optional.
Yes. Yes, so many great dressings, dips, and saucy things in here to keep you going. Even got that tofu feta in here, vegan nutty parm, balsamic glaze, that everything tahini dressing you talked about, scrappy pesto, the carrot top chimichurri, sunflower cream sauce, roasted red pepper sauce, and strawberry top vinaigrette, and of course, luscious lemon dressing and green goddess dressing. We love those things. And chapter 10 is sip and save. So what's your, we got a chapter 7, sustainable sips. What's your favorite sip?
So speaking of peanut butter jars, I have a great recipe in here for a peanut butter jar latte. And that's a really fun one. So you can take like your empty peanut butter jar, add some coffee, maple syrup, and shake it up. And you have like a latte made with peanut butter. Really delicious, really easy. Another one are great, like I have these, which is one of my most popular recipes on my blog, so I had to put them in there, but like ginger immunity shots. So they're like, they pack a punch. It's ginger, turmeric, so good. And then you can save the leftover pulp to add to like a stir fry if you want. So in every recipe, I made it a point to put in the notes that if you have like scraps left over, how to use them. So that's one element too.
I mean, that is probably, I mean, when we're talking about scrappy cooking, of course, things laying around the house and things wilting and all that stuff like that. But when you think about those scraps, like the potato skins and stuff like that, that is a major area of food waste. And just so great that you're giving people some options to be able to start to utilize those items. And you close out with chapter 11, preserves, powders, ferments, and other fun stuff. Give us a fun stuff. What's one of your favorite recipes that falls into the category of fun stuff?
Yeah. So one a lot of people don't think about is onion peel powder. So you can take your onion peels and dehydrate them and then ground them up into like a powder for a seasoning. You could do the same thing with garlic peels. So really fun ways to utilize that.
Nice. Oh, that's great. So much good
there's
stuff
in here. There's a lot packed into this book. Like I couldn't stop. I was just like, I wanted it to be almost like an encyclopedia for people who want to eat lower waste and whole food plant-based.
So, I think you've really achieved that goal with this, because I just think along with it being having the, you know, it's a fun encyclopedia, everybody. It's a fun encyclopedia. Yeah. It's a fun vibe. You've got the visuals. You've got all of these recipes beautifully laid out with all the wonderful tips and all of them. And in that, preserves, powders, ferments, and other fun stuff, we got a sourdough starter, a small sourdough loaf, sourdough discard crackers. Come on with the discard crackers. Get into it. Homemade vanilla extract, perfect preserved lemons, sun-dried tomatoes, herb breadcrumbs, citrus peel powder, tomato peel powder, beet powder, pomegranate peel. This is amazing. You're showing everybody how to do this. How fantastic. Lentil sprouts, turmeric sauerkraut, spicy pickled red onions, quick and easy homemade pickles, quick and easy homemade pickles, pickled watermelon spears, strawberry top vinegar, grow your own vegetables from food scraps and freezer scraps. So you're talking about those items in here too. And that is scrappy cooking, my dear listener. Carly, I got to ask you, we just went through that whole book in that fast fashion. We really gave somebody some good bites in there. But what's a book brag for you? Something that you're most proud of when it comes to scrappy cooking?
I think just so when I wrote this book, my sister left her job. I didn't know if I was going to be able to do it. My mom was ill at the time. My sister left her job. And I seriously considered hiring a ghostwriter because it was like a crisis situation.
Sure.
And my sister came and worked with me full time and we did it ourselves. And I'm just so proud. I'm so proud of every recipe. So proud of how it looks. So that would be it. I'm just glad that like I went through, because at some point in a point of desperation, I was Googling like cookbook ghostwriters, like sure. Ray can't be writing your own book. What do people do in a situation of crisis? And I'm so glad I did not do that, because it would have felt so disjointed from who I was. And after going through and writing every recipe in the book, I don't think I could ever do that. And right. I don't know how people do it.
I don't either.
So I'm so grateful that like I persevered and that my sister helped and that we got it done. And I'm just really proud of the whole thing.
Well, I think that's a lot to be proud of. And I got to tell you, I'm glad that you persevered as well. And I know everybody out there who goes and picks up their copy of Plant You Scrappy Cooking, or perhaps you pre-ordered it and it is arriving on your doorstep today. I know you're going to be glad that Carly persevered and got this to the bookshelves for you. Now we're going to do your rapid fire round of questions. Are you ready?
Yes, let's do it.
Here we go. Number one, cake or pie?
Cake. No question.
Scale of 1 to 10. How good of a driver are you?
2. I failed my driving test twice and it was horrible. It was terrible.
How are you on the highway? Do you have any freak out moments? Or are you pretty good these days?
I'm pretty good now, but like, I wouldn't say I'm a 10 out of 10 driver, that's for sure.
I remember I was driving in driver's ed with my friend and she hated it so much, and we got on the highway and it was just that moment in Clueless where they're driving on the highway and she freaks out. She just started going like 10 miles an hour and they were like, what are you doing? And I was like, what's happening? What is happening? Oh, hopefully her driving's improved. Listen, number three, fill in the blank. Taylor Swift is?
Everything.
There you go. Favorite spice or herb to cook with?
Dill.
I didn't really need to ask it, I guess, but there we go. Must have tool in the kitchen.
You know what? I'm such an air fryer stan. Like I just tofu. We cook tofu in this house so much, and like it just pops in the air fryer, and I don't know if I could live without it now.
So good. I get that. I just wish they were a little bigger. Even they've made bigger ones.
It's called an air fryer dual oven. And it's, I don't want to give like this huge plug for Ninja right now, but it folds down from the wall in case your podcast is sponsored.
So it's like a good size.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah. Like I find I use it more than my oven, and it can fit like a small sheet pan. So you can spread your whole tofu out on it. It's not like one of those ones that are like the small little black ones where you pull it out.
Yep. Our oven, we got a new oven a year ago and it said it had an air fryer feature and we used it. And I was like,
this is not an air fryer.
This is a fan. Like, well, let's call it what it is. Let's call it what it is. Your next question, name one of the seven dwarfs.
Sleepy.
There you go. And was Tut the first name that came to mind for your cat, or was there another one?
So Tut maybe was, but we don't call him Tut. I call him Tut like publicly. I call him Muna, and I have no idea why or where it came from, but he is Muna. Like, I'm like,
all right.
Does that make any sense?
Hey, I call my animals lots of different things besides their names. So yes, it does make tons of sense. You know, we got nicknames. Those things happen. It is what it is.
Yeah.
They pick them up. All right. What dish did you make last?
What did I make? So I made the dilly orzo soup yesterday, and that's the last dish I cooked. And I cooked it on Chef AJ's show. I don't know if you've ever know who she is or been on her show. So I cooked it on her show, and it was great. I had it for dinner.
Oh, nice. And donuts or cupcakes?
Cupcakes.
Pancakes or waffles?
Waffles.
Favorite shape pasta?
Penne.
Barbecue sauce or hot sauce?
Hot sauce.
And your last question, very important. If you could have a scoop of ice cream right now, any flavor, what flavor would you pick?
So they have this flavor in Canada that was called like moose tracks. Do they have that there?
Yeah, I think, or maybe I had it in Canada. I think we have it here. I think so.
Yeah. So anyways, I haven't had it.
Bits and stuff. What's in it?
I haven't had it since going vegan. It's like a vanilla ice cream with peanut butter and chocolate through it. And like, it's just so good. I know they make some vegan ones, but it's not called Moose Tracks, but that's like the best ice cream from my memory before I went plant-based.
All right, we need to get you a scoop of vegan Moose Track then. Well, Carly, please tell everyone where they can find you on social media and the internet, please.
Yeah, so you can find me anywhere at Plant Y-O-U, so Plant You. And I'll be on there. And
all the places, streamlined, easy breezy. And way to go on your rapid fire there. You did very, very well. Very well. So everybody go, of course, if you haven't yet, run out and get your copy of Plant You, Scrappy Cooking, 140 plant-based zero waste recipes that are good for you, your wallet, and the planet. I promise you, you won't be sorry. And Carly, a very happy pub day to you, my dear. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today about this fabulous new book. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. This was just like a blast. The most fun podcast I've done, which I've done a lot. So thank you so much.
This has been a Muzzy Cat production.